I don't know if Eric is able to hear that. Were you able to hear that music, Eric? I'm just kind of curious.
I heard the beginning of it, and I'm trying to guess the riff, but I'm going to need some help.
Yeah, yeah. LaGrange, ZZ Top.
Yeah.
I know it always doesn't always come down. Doesn't always come down the line to you on the Zoom call. We're going to be playing a lot of ZZ Top today, given the passing of Frank Beard, 77-year-old. Of course.
Oh, that's terrible. I did not know that. Oh, boy. You know, speaking of ZZ Top, do you know this is one of their obscure hits, Manic Mechanic? Do you know that one?
Yes, I do. I got that in the iPod. I had to find that
yeah.
one.
Yeah, that's sad. I didn't know.
Yeah, and he ended up passing away. He had been ill for quite some time, apparently. Last time he performed with the band was November of 2025. And yeah. There's only one original, you know, left on the road at this point. And it's just, you know, all the great ones, Father Time comes for all of us at some point, Eric. What can I say?
Yeah, and you know what's particularly sad about that? I mean, they hadn't lost a step. They were still good. You know,
oh, yeah.
I see a lot of the bands that you and I grew up with from the 80s, and they really should retire, some of those guys. I love them, but they're just, they're not what they were.
And just some that I could think of, Motley Crue would be one of them.
David Lee Roth.
Definitely. Did I tell you David Lee Roth was coming to the Brit Festival here? And then once people figured out that he stopped singing probably about 10 years ago, they ended up canceling that show. He just not there. But trying to get a few bucks, I understand it. I appreciate people trying to keep the career going. But it's not working all that well.
It's painful. Yeah.
Now, on epautos.com, Eric Peters, of course, automotive journalist. We talk automotive stuff every week here. And one of my favorite articles you put out this week here had to do, instead of focusing on more horsepower, you have an article, it's less horsepower and more fun. And it's kind of an ode to vehicles that you drive that may not necessarily, you know, be the fastest or the brawniest or the, you know, the 0 to 60 fastiest, if you want to call it that. Huh?
Sure. Yeah, there's this weird kind of blinkered fixation on horsepower. You know, one of the things that has been driving EV sales, or at least they've been trying to drive EV sales with this, is, wow, it gets to 60 in ludicrous speed, you know, 2.8 seconds. It has 800 horsepower, 1,000 horsepower.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine. But, you know, at the end of the day, it really doesn't make the vehicle fun. You look at the cars that are revered from the past and even the present, and a lot of them really aren't that powerful. Like one of the most popular cars that everybody seems to like, certainly everybody who's driven one, is the Mazda Miata. And it's been around since 1989.
Absolutely.
And the current, and the current model has all of, like, I think 181 horsepower. So, you know, it's pretty much got the power of something like a Toyota RAV4. You know, it's not a rocket, but it is a lot of fun to drive that car. And I'd like to see the auto industry get back to that ethos. You know, there was a time when cars were fun. You and I are into old Volkswagens. They're absolutely terribly slow, but they have personality. They're fun. You know, and anyone who's ever owned one of those cars, you ask them about it, they smile and they talk about their memories of the car and, you know, how much they enjoyed it and all these other things. And nevertheless, the thing took 25 seconds to get to 60.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, the Vanagon, the 82 Vanagon camper of mine, which I've not taken out camping this year, I got to do that. But it's been a hot summer, you know, out here on the West Coast, I guess. Every time I would pull into a campground, there was one time I took it to a campground out on the coast, and this was maybe 3-4 years ago, and all the young guys, we're talking young guys in their low to mid-20s, right, somewhere in that era, they were looking at the van as if it was a naked woman pulling in there.
Absolutely.
And I think it was part of that, because now that was maybe newer when they were, you know, young kids, you know, that kind of thing, and maybe that was part of it. But the fact is that they are fun to drive, and it's certainly not fast. That Vanagon is like 0 to 60 in 45 seconds, I think is what it takes.
It's proud of being slow. No?
But it is fun, and there's personality. And that's what you're talking about with the Miata.
Yes.
I drove a Miata. I rented one time when we were in Hawaii a few years ago. And that was one of the most fun cars I ever drove, and it wasn't the most powerful one, but it was great fun, and it was a stick, I think, at that point. It was a manual, and it just stuck to the road like glue, and on the road to Hana, all those kind of places. Mm-hmm. I don't think I ever had so much fun driving a car. out in the road.
Oh, certainly. You know, another example, and I love to ride this hobby horse, but I'll get on it again. You know, mid-late 70s Trans Ams and Z28s.
Yep.
They sold those things in immense numbers. In 1979, Pontiac sold more than 100,000 Trans Ams. This doesn't include Firebirds. You know, that is a metric of something, I think. And none of those cars from circa 75 through 81 had more than 220 horsepower. Most of them had about 180. They weren't particularly fast, but man, they had T-tops. They had those engine turn dashboards. They were just cool. They were fun. People love to drive those cars. And they're much more fun to drive, frankly, than the modern performance cars. Even though the modern performance cars will blow them out of the water, you know, on a statistical basis, 0 to 60 horsepower, yep, all that stuff. But it's very, very difficult to quantify fun. And I think that's the problem. Like, how do you convey that to people? You know, it certainly it's doable. I wish they would try to do it again.
And the only thing I would suggest, though, is if you are running one of those vintage vehicles. Now, do you have a carb on your Trans Am or not?
Of course.
Okay. I didn't know if you had kept it stock or not. You know, for people who aren't big into wrenching and things like that, one of the best things you can do is still, you can get aftermarket fuel injection, and then you never have to worry about the carburetor and the choke and all those other things. It's a little more drivable, but you kept your stock though, right?
Oh yeah, because you know I do know how to wrench. But your point is well taken. Somebody who perhaps doesn't want to have to deal with that, you can get these standalone systems. It's not a very elaborate thing, and have your mechanic put it on, and then you will have the drivability of a modern car in a very old car. It's remarkable how that will transform the drivability, the cold start performance, part throttle, all of that to something that's very comparable to anything that's new without all the creepy Big Brother tech, without all the driver assistance technology, without a touchscreen, you know, everything that you want and all the stuff that you don't want.
Absolutely. Great thing about how you can get more fun, but not necessarily more horsepower. If you have a comment on this or have a question for Eric, too, we got about 15 minutes left with him today. 770-563-3770-KMED. Let me know, and we'll be back with more Wheels Up on KMED.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal option?
642, Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters. Eric, we got all sorts of people want to talk to you this morning. Hello, Eric.
Yep, sure.
Oh, okay, good. But I just want to make sure you're there. Okay, sometimes we've lost this stuff.
Yeah.
Dave, you have a line on an old vintage Firebird, a convertible, huh? What's the story?
Yeah, it's a convertible with a V8 in it. I don't know the year of it. It doesn't belong to me. My neighbor, my friend, had two flat tires, and he left it just kind of funky in my driveway.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, just about any vintage Firebird that would be a convertible could be something worth picking up, wouldn't you think, Eric?
Well, actually, the only convertibles that were made during the classic era were from 67 through 69, so that's a highly desirable car. And it should have a Pontiac engine, whether it's a V8 or the inline six. I think maybe some of them had the Chevy inline six, but I can't remember. In any event, if it is a solid car and the price is right, I would snap it up.
Yeah, all right. Dave, there's your marching orders this morning. Thanks for the call. Phil's in Rogue River. Hello, Phil. You're on with Eric Peters. Good morning.
Morning, Eric. Morning, Bill.
Morning. Morning.
I was just curious if Eric heard about this new law that California passed about virtually taking away 70% of aftermarket production tires.
Oh, yes.
You have heard. What do you think about that?
It's terrible, the typical and expected. The background on this is that a lot of the OEMs, meaning the car companies, will fit tires to their new vehicles as they leave the factory that are designed to have the least possible rolling resistance to help them incrementally increase mileage, you know, which is a compliance issue for them. Anyway, so you buy the car and then the tires wear out and you want to get another set of tires. Well, you have the choice. You know, you can pick which tires you want, right? Well, some of the tires that are less expensive perhaps have higher rolling resistance, so they wear faster or something like that. California doesn't like that. They say that the tire emissions, the particulate emissions, have got to be dealt with. So they're essentially saying now that you have got to buy a tire that exactly matches the OEM spec. So in other words, whatever your vehicle came with from the factory, you've got to buy the same type of tire to replace it with.
But what I'm afraid of is that when California passes stuff like that, you know who's hot on their coattails. It's going to be
The rest of the country.
I think Phil's right about that, Bill. The rest of the country follows. My concern, Phil, and I, you know, to your point, what would bother me about this bigly is that essentially the system will end up responding to what California wants because California is such a big market. You see where I'm coming from, Eric, on that
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's such a vast market that they're not going to create, you know, separate markets for, especially if other states, if, you know, Oregon and Washington and some other of these states decide to jump in on that, then you've got, you know, a third of the country, constituting the bulk of the market saying that this is the way it's going to be here. And then it's going to be a different way over there. You know, that ends up just making everything more difficult. So the way they respond to that typically is just to make one size fits all. Very Soviet.
Yeah. So Phil, go ahead.
My main concern is, you know, I live rural, and on my factory OEM truck tires, I was getting stuck in my driveway. So I've got these aftermarket, knobby, off-road-like style oversized tires on my truck. And, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to all of us rural people that live out in the middle of nowhere?
They don't care. You're deplorable. That's blunt, but it's the truth. You know, do you think Gavin Newsom cares about you? These people just don't care. They have their agenda, and they're going to push it, and they're going to impose it on us.
Boy, heck of a note. Phil, thanks for letting us know about that. I heard Lars mention that on his show yesterday, the first time
that's why I got all riled up about it.
Thanks. Okay, well, thanks for the call. Resistance, I guess. I guess it'll be, and then it's going to be tire smuggling from state to state, right?
Yeah, I think we're going to end up getting to that point. And ultimately, that's the only way that we can fight this, though, is to refuse to comply and to find ways around it.
And maybe, I guess, it's just going down that road that we're all going to be outlaws someday, the way it's looking.
You know, it seems to be that way. Yeah, exactly. The flock cameras, they'll catch you with, unlawful tires.
I'll talk about flock here. We've been talking about flock a lot here lately. Let me grab another call here. Good morning. You're on KMED with Eric Peters. Who's this?
This is Jerry.
Hi, Jerry. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I own an older car right now. It's a 68 Mercury Cougar, so it's on the Ford side of the family.
Cool.
Eric's GM vehicle.
Is that the one, Phil, that had the lights that would, like, blink in sequence? Those ones?
Yeah, the sequential turn signals.
Those were cool.
It's an upmarket Mustang, basically.
Headlights, which sometimes cause problems, but you just have to keep them in repair. There's a lot of vacuum hoses under the hood.
Sure.
And it has the original motor and driveline, the 302, the C4 transmission, the, three-speed automatic. I kept it as original as possible. My dealings with the carburetor were it had an old Autolite carburetor designed in the 60s and about 7 or 8 years ago, I put a Holley 500 CFM on it, just a two-barrel carb, kept it as a two-barrel. Mm-hmm. And the change in not performance, well, it did goose it a bit performance-wise. It's not a high-performance motor. It's all been rebuilt and everything. It's a lot of fun to drive. But the difference in carburetor, the newer carburetor supposedly was just engineered better than the original. It was about 50 years newer in the carburetor, and that can make a vast difference if you want to stick with the carburetor.
So the drivability is pretty good in your experience.
Not bad. You know, you really have to pay attention when you get on the freeway. You know, it's got the old steering, it's not rack and pinion, and you have to pay attention. But it is fun to drive, and it's been restored, and it's one of those that goes out to the car shows and stuff like that.
And it makes you smile, doesn't it?
It does. It's a lot different than the 2019. I call it my non-computerized car, and my wife calls it the other woman.
We've all been there.
That can make sense to anybody who's storing a car because you're throwing money at it all the time, and maybe it's more fun than another woman. Me being an older guy, I'm 70.
Yeah. I think it's a great story, though. Thanks for sharing it, and thank you for keeping automotive history like that on the road.
Yeah, and guys, by the way, the nice thing about Hollies is they're very tunable, and there is an abundance of aftermarket support and parts available for that, so you can get the combo dialed in perfectly for whatever you happen to be putting it on.
Indeed. Thanks for the call. I really appreciate that. By the way, Holly seems to be, you know, in a renaissance of sorts because from the looks of it, you know, people are trying to keep their older, more vintage vehicles going, and they're still building carburetors. They're still doing that.
Yeah. Oh, so. Absolutely. You know, I've mentioned before, and I think that this is a really good way to understand our situation. You can replace the entire fuel system in an old car for about $400, meaning the carburetor, because that's pretty much the fuel system. That's the whole thing. Okay, there's a $40 mechanical fuel pump.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the whole fuel system. Think about that. You can literally return it to as brand new condition for that. And the fact is, most of the time, all you need is a rebuild kit. And the rebuild kits typically cost about $75.
Indeed. 770-5633. It is Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters with me this morning. Eric, we've been talking a lot about Flock. We got a few minutes left here, and we've conversed about this here in Josephine County. I don't know if you knew, but the sheriff last week canceled the Flock contract. We're wondering if this is going to be a growing trend. And I talked with a civil liberties attorney the other day who had a very interesting idea on the way states can actually fight back against the databasing of people just by nature of being outdoors. But where are you coming from on the what's wrong with Flock thing?
Boy, well, there's so many things. You know, one is this to me, idiotic idea that aren't only the bad sheep that are going to be captured by the cameras. Are you kidding me? You know, did we not learn anything from COVID? Can you imagine what will happen when the state and the corporations that are in bed with the state have the ability to constantly monitor us and monetize us and control us this way? It's outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous. There's so many ways to object to this. It's got to be objected to, because if this is allowed to pass, if this is implemented, the next time an emergency comes around like COVID, we're doomed. This country is going to be East Germany times 10 on steroids.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And for fun and profit. Now, the one thing about the civil liberties aspect of this and Pacific Legal Foundation, I was talking with a libertarian attorney there the other day. And what she suggested is what Maine is doing, because it can be an amazingly powerful law enforcement tool to catch super bad guys. You know, we do know that. It has happened, all right? It does happen all the time. The point being is that what she says is that Maine made it so that, okay, the cameras work, but the information is kept for only 2 or 3 minutes before it is arrested. And all it has done is that it's checked to see if that plate is connected with a hot list, like a stolen car or an Amber Alert or something like that. That's all it is. And if it's not, it vanishes. That's what they do in Maine. I thought that was an interesting compromise on this.
Well, that's better than nothing. I'm still opposed to it. I don't like the idea of these private companies. That's what Flock is. It's what Axon is. You're partnering with the government to fleece us. You know what they do? They approach a city council and they say, oh, we'll give you these things for free, and then you can buy the data from us. And then the municipality can use that data to extract money from you. This money motive, the government shouldn't be about collecting money from us fundamentally. You know, this is a real problem about extracting every last penny they can on pretextual excuses. Oh, we saw you made a right turn on red. Oh, you're not wearing your seatbelt, stuff like that. It's got to be stomped hard.
All right. The thing is, though, Eric, your thinking is also 1776, dude.
Well, we need to think more like that again.
I'm with you.
Do you want to live in a prison? You know, at least I'd like to maybe hold up a bank before they send me to prison. You know, I mean, if I'm going to live in a prison, I kind of want to earn it. You know, otherwise, no, leave me alone.
All right. Got a couple minutes left here, and then we'll grab another call or two before. Hi, good morning. You're on with Eric Peters. Who's this?
Thank you, Bill. Tom here. Hey, we own a 99 Dodge Caravan 6-banger and a 2004 banger. And I would just wanted to ask Eric, what is availability of parts for those? We've had a few things where there are still, even at that vintage, the little computer chips. And anyway, what's the availability of parts for that?
Well, as far as the hard parts, I think the six you're talking about, I think, is the 3.6 liter V6, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's still in production. So, you know, as far as parts for that, the mechanical stuff should be absolutely no problem. Some of the electronic parts might be a little bit more iffy, but these days with all of the suppliers out there and the aftermarket suppliers, you ought to be able to get whatever you need. I think you'll be able to support that vehicle for some time to come.
Before before they decide at a certain point that anything past a certain year will be banned, so that you'll be herded into the computer cars.
Got yeah, it. They may try to do that, but I think you'll be okay at least for the immediate future.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Tom. Great call. It's 6:55, and Eric, you got to take off today a little earlier than usual. But
we'll do. I've got another interview at 10 o'clock. Unfortunately, so yeah, we have to go a little early today.
We'll have you back next week. Thank you so much. And by the way, latest review is on the Range Rover Sport. Thumbs up, thumbs down. What was your take on it?
Big thumbs up, except for the cheesy looking LCD touchscreens. But we can talk about that next week.
All right. The LCD touchscreen. That makes it luxury, right?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, we got to be more like Bugatti. Bugatti bringing back the analog dials, right? I thought that was really
I think so.
All right. We'll talk to you then, Eric. Take care.
Thank you, Bill. Bye-bye.
epautos.com. This is the Bill Meyer Show on KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford, KPXG Grants Pass.